We're about to begin a new topic today. So I think the next topic we're going to try to discuss is very much a Shas topic. It's something that, although in theory it starts as a Chesed Mishnah topic, but as many of our Shas topics have shown us, is that, as the name is Shas, means it kind of permeates all areas of Halacha. So the topic I want to begin to discuss today is the topic of ownership of mammon, namely bialus of mammon. Who exactly owns mammon? Sounds like a very strange question. I mean, if I own this shirt, so the shirt belongs to me. I own this house, I own the car. What's the shaila? How can there be a question as to who owns something? So we'll see as we go on that you have a lot of different scenarios where you have two people owning things. One person is a shul, one person is a masha, one person has a kinyan aguf, one person has a kinyan peiros, one person is a partner. You have a lot of different permutations in terms of ownership, which become critical in terms of how they play out in terms of a chayim in your day. Who is considered to be the bialim? We know there are many mitzvahs and there are many yisurim that revolve around ownership. If I own something, so then I have certain halachas that relate to that. Just as an example, if I own dalminim, I can be yotzei the mitzvah dalminim with those dalminim. If I don't own it, I can't. So who exactly is considered to be the bialim in many, many areas of halacha? So it starts as chashim mishpat. It's going to affect many, many areas of our performance in mitzvahs. So the first sugya in terms of ownership is really a sugya that appears in yesterday's Kriyas HaTorah in Parshas Bahar. And that's what the Gemara speaks about in many places. The difference between what's called the Kinyan Peiros in contrast to a Kinyan Haguf. A Kinyan Haguf is Kishma Keinu. Kinyan Haguf means that I own the object itself. Let's say, for example, a piece of land. I own the land. How did I acquire the land? So we spoke about this earlier in the year. We spoke about Kinyanim. A person can acquire land in several ways. Either the person could buy the land, or a person could receive the land as a matana, or if it was Hefka land, the person could just be Zocha on it, or a person can get land via Rusha. So many, many ways that a person can attain violence, can attain ownership on a piece of land. So 99% of the time, whenever we say that a person owns land, what we mean is that the person owns a Kinyan Haguf on the land. But sometimes you can have a situation where I don't really own a Kinyan Haguf on the land, I own a Kinyan Peiros on the land. So let's say, for example, I own land, and I enter into an agreement with you that I'm going to retain the ownership on the land, but I'm going to sell you the rights to the fruit. You're going to have the right to go and eat the fruit off the tree for the next 10 years. You're going to have the right to plow the field and harvest the fruit, harvest the tefuah, and you're going to have the rights to enjoy the fruit. You can have a situation of a kinyan peiros not only on karka, you can have a kinyan peiros on metalton as well. Let's say I own a cow, and I'm retaining rights to the cow, but I'm going to give you rights for the next couple of years in order to, you're going to get all the milk out of the cow, you're going to get all the wool off of the sheep. So I'm going to give you a kinyan peiros in the object, either in a karka or a metalton. So I retain the kinyan aguf, and you retain the kinyan peiros. Question is, before we can discuss bialus, before we can discuss who is the true owner of this object, question is, how do you even pull off such a stunt? Does the halacha even recognize such a deal? There is a machlekes atanayim we spoke a little bit about earlier in the year. We spoke about kinyanim. There is a machlekes between Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanan whether I can sell you something that doesn't exist yet. The Chacham's view is, I can only sell you something that exists. I can't say something that doesn't yet exist. And Rabbi Meir disagrees. Rabbi Meir says, no, that I can sell you something even if it doesn't exist yet. So the Gemara in Mamritziya puts the brakes in Rabbi Meir Shita. What does it mean? Rabbi Meir says, I can tell you something that mamish doesn't exist. It's never going to come. It's going to, maybe 1 in a billion chance it's going to come to the world. So the Gemara says, no. That even according to Rabbi Meir, who says, that's only if it's what's called a vidi di asur. That's only something which is likely to come. The example that the Gemara gives is dekel peiros. If I want to sell you fruit, I don't want to sell you my palm tree. I don't want to say the date tree. I want to say the fruit of the tree. So Rabbi Meir says you can do that because the odds are, unless you do something really foolish to the tree, it's going to produce fruit next year. So it's called Avida Diyos. So it's very likely that it's going to produce fruit. So therefore, Adamak Nedova Shalom Aliyah, as long as it's normal to come. And the Rabbanim disagree even with that. But Rabbi Meir concedes that if it's something which is so unlikely, something which 1 in 1,000 chance is going to happen, that's called the milzo delovi to diyasu, so that's going to be a problem. So it's interesting that the Gemara has the machlekes between Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanon about the mak the dovash shlovel yolam, not just in Cheshit Mishpat, but it applies in other areas. It applies in Eben Ezer. The Mishnah has a machlekes at Tanoim about, what if I go up to a non-Jewish woman and I give her a ring and I say I remekudeshes, so obviously she's not Jewish, kedushin atayfsin. What if I know that she's planning on converting? So I say to her, Rebbe, Kudeshus Li, Liachat Shetisgairi. I give her the ring, I want to jump the gun, and I say, I'm giving you this ring, Rebbe, Kudeshus, and you go to the mikvah next week, you'll finish your conversion process, and then then the condition should be chal. So does that work or not? So the Gemara says that that's also called the Dovah Shalom Baliolam, because on the one hand, I can't be Makadosh now, so she doesn't really exist right now. The Jewish entity, a Jewish woman, is neat unto Kedushin. A non-Jewish woman is not subject to Kedushin. So the entity of a Jewish woman doesn't exist yet. So I want to give her a ring that if and when she converts, the Kedushin should be Teifes. So Gemara says, that's not, so Dovah Shalom Bali Yadlam. So according to Rameya, maybe that would be good. According to the Rabbanon, so that would be a problem. So our kolbanim, we have machlekes atarav. We pass it like the rabban. We pass it against Rabbi Meir. We pass it that ain't no demach the dovah shlo bali olam, even if it is avir di yosim. So if that's the case, how can we even be discussing a sugi? What are we wasting our time talking about? Whether how do we the halach of you kidding payrus? You can't even get off the ground. You can't even create a scenario of kidding. It doesn't exist kidding payrus. How can you ever create a scenario of kidding payrus? How can I ever sell you just payrus alone? So the Gemara says that even the rabbanan who hold that ain't on the mark, the dovah shlo bali olam, and you can't just sell peiros as an entity themselves. What you can do is the following. You can sell what's called deka lepeiros. I word the transaction as follows, that I'm not just selling you peiros. If I just say, I'm selling you next year's harvest, that's meaningless, according to the Rabbanan. What I'm selling you is I'm giving you a share in the land vis-a-vis peiros. Legabi the peiros. Lemaisa, I still own the land. Not, if I give you the whole land, I transfer the ownership of the whole land, then the share's over today. So obviously, I'm still holding on to the rights of the land. I'm only kidding a goof of the land, but I'm being mocked at you, the goof le pay raisa. I'm being mocked at you, the kark le pay raisa. I'm mocked at you, the behema le milk shabo. I'm mocked at you, the sheep le wool shabo. So you have a kinyan within the goof. Legabe the payers. So that entity exists. That concept exists, and that overrides the problem. That circumvents the problem of Eino Demach the Dovah Shlo Bali Olam. So we're able to figure out how to get around such a finagle the system in a little sense. We can get around the Dovah Shlo Bali Olam problem. So we have such an entity called a Kinyan Haguf the payers. Is the Torah ever speaking about such a thing? Is it something in the figment of our imagination? Such a concept called the Kinyan Haguf the payers. Is it something that we just made up, or the Torah itself actually discusses such a scenario? So the answer is, it exists in Parshas Bahar. That's exactly what we read about. Maybe when we read yesterday's Kriyas HaTorah, we didn't realize the halachic parameters that we were looking at, but that's exactly what happened. The Torah says, when you sell land, b'zman sheyovel noeg. So when you sell land, it's my personal land, I got it Yerusha from my father, grandfather, him. So the din is that even if I sell it to you, b'zman sheyovel, it's going to come back to me when Yovel comes. So what kind of a deal is that? It's a very abundant kind of a deal. I'm selling you the land, and then it's going to come back to me in 20 years anyway. So how can you call that a kinyan haguf? Kinyan haguf means I bought it, it's mine, the olam vod, you're out of the picture, you don't have no shaykhs to it. That's not what happened. I said, even though I quote-unquote sold it to you, I'm still retaining ownership. I still have a kinyan haguf on it. So the Gemara says in the end of the fourth paragraph of Masechet Gittin, that whenever you sell land, b'zman sheyovel noeg in Eretz Yisrael, that's automatically a kinyan payrus. It can't be more than a kinyan payrus. All right, it's coming back again. So the whole, that's mamash. If you look at the psukim say, when you sell land, b'zman sheyovel noeg, be careful not to cheat the guy on the price. Why? Because he's not really selling, you're not really selling him the land. Proof positive, you're going to get him back in 20 years from now. All you're selling him is the rights to the payers. So how can you sell him rights to the payers? Isn't it a dovah shlo bali olam? So the answer is, you're selling him the karka, legabi the payers, and that's considered to be an acceptable method of acquisition. So this model of selling something, a dekha le payers, selling karka le payers, is something that the Torah does address. The Torah does have that model, and now we can extrapolate that model to all cases. The Torah speaks about land payers. We can talk about animals for milk, talk about animals for wool. Any scenario that meets those criteria is automatically labeled in halacha as a kinyan, in a sense, a kinyan payers. So the question becomes, okay, so now you have a scenario called a kinyan payers. So Reuven owns the kinyan haguf still, and Shimon owns the kinyan payers. Tachlis, who owns the land? Who is considered to be the bialim on the land itself? My nafkamina, we know what happens. 20 years, I'm going to get it back. The other person eats the fruit, so who cares? Who owns the land? Whose name is written on the title? So that already chaps enough kamina ladina. Because we know that in certain areas of halacha, it's very important to know who is the bialim. There are certain halachas in Arachayim, in Yerday, and other areas of halacha that revolve around who is the bialim on that particular piece of property. So here the Gemara has a famous machlok, which is Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lachish, a little bit in the yom of Shavuos. That, you know, the Shavuos is the beginning of the Zman HaBikurim. The reason why it's called Yom HaBikurim in the Chumash is not really because you actually bring Bikurim on Shavuos. The reason why it's called Yom HaBikurim is because you bring the Shtel Lechem, and the Shtel Lechem are the first of the fruits of the wheat. And once you bring the Shtel Lechem, then you can now begin to offer Bikurim. So it's called Yom HaBikurim Al Shem, the Shtel Lechem, and now you have a head there to start to bring Bikurim. Did they actually bring Bikurim on Shavuos is unclear. So there is a Mekubetzes in Mechairis that claims that they actually did not bring Bikurim on Shavuos itself. When we say that Shavuos is the Yom HaBikurim, that means that's the beginning of the Bikurim season, and then the Bikurim is actually brought the beginning the following day. Why can't you bring Bikurim on Shavuos itself? So that's unclear why the Mekubetzes says that. So the Mariz Al-Ghazi, this Parish of Mechaira, suggests that maybe the reason why you can't bring Bikurim on Shavuos is because the Mishnah Bikurim says that you have to bring a korban together with the Bikurim. You don't just bring fruit. You bring a korban that accompanies it, and it could be that korban is not Tocha Yontif. Not all korbanos can be brought on Yontif. Certain korbanos can be brought on Yontif, others cannot. So maybe that's why the Shit Mekubetzes says that you can't bring Bikurim on Yontif on Shavuos for a very technical reason. Even though, in theory, once you bring the Shli'al Lechem, this man Bikurim has begun, but Tachlis, you can't do it because you can't bring a korban. Others give other reasons why. So that's a question whether we follow that. Remember when I was a kid, somebody used to always tell us Shavuos, there was the Chag of Bikurim, and there always were pictures of people walking around with the baskets of Bikurim, and everyone when we were a kid thought that's exactly what they did in the Beis HaMikdash on Shavuos. So according to some, that's not true. That didn't start until the next day. But I guess in elementary school they held like the other days. So get back to the Lamais, the bottom line is there's a mitzvah Bikurim. You run Shavuos, you have Shavuos, Lamais, there's a mitzvah Bikurim coming around the corner. So one of the parts of the mitzvah Bikurim is that it's not just a mitzvah to bring Bikurim, there's a mitzvah to read the parsha at the time that you bring the Bikurim. So you have to read Rami Ovinavi, and the very end of Rami Ovinavi, so you thank the Rebbeinu Shalom for bringing us to Eretz Yisrael, and you say, Hadoma Shenasata Li Hashem. You praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving me this land, Shenasata Li Hashem. The Gemara says that when you bring Bikurim, if you don't own the land, how can you say with a straight face, Shenasata Li Hashem? It's not true. Rebbeinu Shalom didn't give you that land. The Gemara says you have to be the Bailam on the land in order to say the Mikra Bikurim. To bring the Bikurim itself that you can bring even if you don't technically own the land, but in order to say the Parsha, so you have to be the Bailam on the land. So the Gemara raises the question in Masechet Gittin, in a few places, the Gemara is the same Shaila. What's the din if a person owns a kid in Paris? What if I set up a deal with you that I own the fruit, but you own the land, so I'm bringing the Bikurim? So I'm coming to the Beis HaMikdash, I'm bringing the Bikurim. And the Kohen says, okay, repeat after me, Rami Ovinavi. And I say, wait a second, I can't do that. Because you want me to say, Shenasat Li Hashem, I don't really own the land, I own the fruit. So Rabbi Yochanan says, that's okay. Rabbi Yochanan says, Kidin Paris, Kidin Aguf Domi. Rabbi Yochanan says that the fact that you have a Kidin Paris on something, that's tantamount to having a Kidin Aguf. It's all the same thing, it doesn't really make a difference. Since you are the Bailam, the Kavi the Paris, so Api Alocha, the field is registered in your name, and therefore you have a right to say with a straight face, Shenasat Li Hashem. And Rish Lakish says, Mapidom. Rish Lakish says, you can't do that. Rish Lakish says, Kidin Paris is life, Kidin Aguf Dami. That you are the owner of the fruit, you have the right to eat the fruit. The other person can contest your right to eat the fruit. But in terms of ownership of the land itself, you have the other person has the title on the land. And therefore, you don't have a Kidin Aguf. You don't have a Kidin Aguf. Therefore, you cannot say, Hashem Asat Ali Hashem. So that's Machlaikis. Whether you may be Vikoyre, according to Rabbi Yechon, and you bring the Bikurim and you say the Parasha, according to Rish Lakish, Hamaycha Pesadela Paris, maybe the Eno Koyre. That you bring the Bikurim, but in terms of reading the Parasha, you have no right to read the Parasha. So the Gemara says in the fourth parakh of Masechet Gittin that machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish carries over now to any mechira b'zman she'yovel noeg. The Parasha was yesterday. Since we started off by saying that a mechira b'zman she'yovel noeg is automatically a kid in Paris, it can't be a kid in Aguf. It's impossible to be a kid in Aguf. All it is a kid in Paris. So what would the din be b'zman she'yovel noeg if I buy a field from you? So I know it's going back for 20 years. So I only have a kid in Paris. The Gemara says in Ochanami that according to Rabbi Yochanan, someone who buys a field b'zman she'yovel noeg can say Mikra Bikurim. Someone who buys the field b'zman she'yovel noeg according to Rish Lakish cannot say Mikra Bikurim. So according to Rish Lakish, where's Mikra Bikurim? Who says Mikra Bikurim? So the answer is the only person who ever says Mikra Bikurim is the person who got a field b'Yerusha. Like we just discussed the Torah spoke about the difference between a stay achuza and a stay mikna. I wasn't originally planning on connecting this to Pashas Bechukosa. This was my next topic, but it worked out really nice. So comes the Torah and says there are two models of ownership. There's the model of Stechuza and the model of Stemikna. Stechuza means that I was Yerushif, my father, my grandfather, great-grandfather, etc. So that's not going anywhere in Yovel. That's staying with me. So that field is a Kirinagup. So according to Rish Lakish, you can only say Mikubikurim on a Stechuza. You cannot stay Mikubikurim on a Stemikna. You bring the Bikurim, but you don't stay Rabbi Avinavi if it's just a Stemikna. So then the Gemara complicates matters in Maseches Gittin and raises the following question. We read in yesterday's Kriyas Torah about a mitzvah of Hachzaras Hasadas B'Yovel. If I sell you land, so then 20 years from now Yovel comes, the land comes back to me. So everybody agrees, there's a parsha, there's Mancha Yovel Noeg. We haven't had Yovel in 2,500 years, but there's Mancha Yovel Noeg. Yovel stopped once the Seres HaShvatim went into Golos, because Yovel only applies when you have all representatives of all the Klais, all the Shvatim in Eretz Yisrael in the right places. So that's already been gone for a long, long time. So comes the halacha and tells us that you have to be machzir sadas b'yovel. So what exactly is considered to be achzara sadas b'yovel? So does that mean when I buy a field? For sure. That's obviously what the Pasha is talking about. What if you have the following scenario? What if Yaakov has a couple of fields and Yaakov dies? Now Yaakov has a bunch of sons, so the sons decide to split up the fields. So Reuben takes one field, Shimon takes one field, Levi takes another field, and Shimon. So each one has their field. So how does the halacha view that? Is that considered to be like a steachuza? It sounds like a classic steachuza. So I was yorish the field, but I have to return to anyone. Whom I can return it to? So the Gemara says, not so simple. It says, maybe you have to return the field in Yovel, you know who? To your brother. Because maybe one could argue that when Yaakov dies, so it's not really clear who's yorish, what? The brothers make a cheshbon between themselves. Who's going to get? Really, in theory, what happens is, when Yaakov dies, so the fields go to the estate. And the estate is really owned by everybody. So Reuben owns the part of the field, and Shimon owns part of all the fields, and Levi owns part of all the fields, and Yehuda owns part of them. There's no one field that's Reuben, one field that's Shimon, one field that's Levi. The din of Yerusha is that all the property goes to Yerusha, and all the brothers have a share in everything. So now that's not practical. Who wants to do that? They each one wants to go their own way, make their own parnasa. So they decide amongst themselves. Reuben says, well, I'm going to take that field, and I'm going to give you that field. And Shimon says, I'm going to take that field, I'm going to give you my share in that field. So basically, whatever Yerusha is really a mekach. What Yerusha really is that the brothers are buying each other out. The perfect world of Yerusha means everybody lives together in the same estate, and they all work all the fields together. But nobody wants to do that, so they divide up the fields accordingly. So how does the halacha view that? The chalukas ha-Yerusha, how does the halacha view that? So there's a big machlokes in the Gemara. Do we say that the chalukas ha-Yerusha is like a mechira, or it's not like a mechira? So one day the Gemara says that chalukas ha-Yerusha is just tantamount to buying and selling rights and fields. So it's mamash like a regular mechira. But you say, no, come on. Chalukas ha-Yerusha is not a mechira. Chalukas ha-Yerusha just means that Igloi Milson Lamafreya turns out retroactively that Reuven was the Yorish of this field, and Shimon was the Yorish of that field, and Levi was the Yorish of that field, that until each one decided what they want, we didn't know yet who was Yerushua, but once they divided amongst themselves, then we view it as a Yerusha, it's not as a Mechira.
Wasn't Chalukas ha-Yerusha done based on a generation up?
Also? Yeah, okay. Yeah, the first one, I mean, it started out as... That starts somewhere. So it starts out from zero. Now the question is, but once the first boy arts die, so how do we view the splitting up the land? Yeah, that's a further question, right? That's a... Yeah, okay. I don't know. That first Yerusha was a very, very funny Yerusha. That it went up and down, and that's a different story. But the Dairus, whenever you regular normal Yerusha, so how does that look of your Yerusha? This is not just the din in Chalukas Ha'aretz and Eretz Yisrael. This is a regular din in Yerusha. Reuben dies and leaves a lot of property. He leaves a house here, a house there, a piece of real estate there, the Yedem there, leaves property here. So then the five sons split up the Yerusha. So what happens? We say that the five sons, each one walks away as a Yerish. Each one walks away b'taras Yerusha. Or do we say, no, each one walks away b'taras Lokeach. Each one basically bought out their brother's share. So who cares, man, if Kamina? In the end, you get in the same land, whether we conceptualize it as saying, I've been a Yerish, I'm a Lokeach. So comes Rabbi Yochanan and says, no, there's a tremendous difference. There's a tremendous nafkamina ladina. Why? What's a nafkamina? Is that the thing is that if it's a lokeach, if it's a mechir, so to speak, then it's chozeh b'yovel. Then when Yovel comes, there's a mitzvah, b'chol eretz achuzasim gulot yitul aretz, v'shavta mishal achuzasim. So you won't believe this. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan formulates the following principle. Ha'achim shecholku l'kuchosein. Rabbi Yochanan holds that when brothers divide up Yerusha, they're treated like l'kuchos, like buyers and sellers. U'machzir and sellers b'yovel. When Yovel comes, they have to split, they have to go back again. Yovel comes, they got to go, oh, take everybody back again, start all over again. And Reuven's got to say to Shimon, every 50 years, the brothers, it's a good family reunion, every 50 years they come back together. And Reuven says to Shimon, oh, remember that piece of land that you sold me 50 years ago? I'm giving it back to you. And now Shimon says to Reuven, oh, remember that land I sold you? I'm giving it back to you. So the Machzirim, they split, they flip again the land. And then, most probably, Reuven's going to say, wait, this is ridiculous. I get my house, my field, and that land. Would you like to sell it to me again? Sure, no problem. So they have to go through the motions. They have to go through Amachira with Achzor Sos B'Yevil to get through the whole 9 yards to fulfill the din of Vishavta Vishlar Lachuzasai. Because otherwise they're violating the mitzvah Satayra of not returning the fields B'Yevil. And the everybody, others disagree with Rabbi Yochanan and say, what are you talking about? That's not Lekuchos. Achen Shecholku is Yerushimein. They're not considered to be Lekuchos. So Machlekes in the Gemara, where the Yerusha, what we call Yerusha is Yerusha B'Taras Yerusha, is Yerusha B'Taras Lekech. So now comes the Gemara and starts to make the following calculation. Comes the Gemara and says that if you hold that Achen Shecholku are basically Lekuchos, that they never really Yerush the field, they're really Lekuchos, so that if it's Bisman Sheyovel Noeg, remember we said that every sale of land in Eretz Israel, Bisman Sheyovel Noeg, is only a Kinyan Peiris. It's not a Kinyan Aguf. Because Kinyan Aguf means, by definition, it's forever. Kinyan Peiris means that I have a share in this land for X amount of years, but it's going to be Chozeh B'Yovel. So as strange as it may sound, when Yaakov dies, and our Reuben, Shimon, and Levi, each one gets a field, each one doesn't really have a kinyan aguf in the field. Every field that a person has in Eretz Yisrael, Bizman Sheyovel Noyeg, is at best going to be a kinyan peiris, because it's Chozeh B'Yovel. Again, if you hold against Rabbi Yochanan, if you hold that it's not Chozeh B'Yovel, if you hold that Achen Shecholku are not Lekuchos, then the Shia is over. But if you hold like Rabbi Yochanan, that Achen Shecholku are Lekuchos, so then just connect the dots. If they're Lekuchos, then it's Chozeh B'Yovel. If it's Chozeh B'Yovel, then it's only a Kinyan Peiris. So, well, what's the ramifications of that statement? So comes the Gemara and says, now we're in for a big, big problem. Why? Because if you really hold that the fields are Chozeh B'Yovel, that means you hold, if you really hold the Lekuchos, you hold it's Chozeh B'Yovel, you hold it's only a Kinyan Peiris. So remember, according to Reish Lakish, when you only have a Kinyan Peiris, you can't say Mikra Bikurim, you can't say Arami Ovid Avi. So according to Reish Lakish, if all these facts are true, so then, can somebody please explain to me, why does the Torah give us a parasha, Rami Yovi Ravi? We just outsmarted the halacha. We just came up with a scenario. It's impossible to ever say a Rami Yovi Ravi, except for the first generation of Eretz Yisrael. Once there was the first Yerusha, that doesn't sound away from the Chumash. The Torah sounds like that's a parasha Le'olam Vod. We're saying a Rami Yovi Ravi for thousands of years. How could you ever have a scenario of a Rami Yovi Ravi? It's always a problem. How could a person in Eretz Yisrael ever say the magic words, Hashem Asatli Hashem? It's not true. The Gemara says there's only one way to explain this, to say that there's only one scenario that you can possibly say Rami Yovid Avi, there's only one son. If Yaakov dies and he has one son, so then that one son, he doesn't have to be machs with anybody, he gets everything. Okay, that helps for the next generation. Now what about the next generation? Only has one son. So comes the Gemara and says, so you're going to tell me that the whole Pasha, 15 Pesukim and Pasha's Kisavo, are only given for the Ben, Ati Yoshua Ben Nun, that there's no other brother? The Gemara says, that is ridiculous. The Gemara says, that's so silly to say such a thing. The Torah gave us a mitzvah, a Torah, that's going to apply to one out of 10,000 people. For how many years is that going to go on? There's a limit. So comes the Gemara and says, that's absurd. Nobody ever says such a thing. But didn't we just connect all the dots? So the Gemara says, oh, this is Rabbi Yochanan Lushitasai. Rabbi Yochanan was the one who got the whole problem started. Because Rabbi Yochanan was the one who said that the Achen Shechoko Lekuchos said, maybe we don't follow Rabbi Yochanan. Maybe we hold Yerushimein. Rabbi Yochanan got the whole problem started that the Achen Shechoko Lekuchos. And Rabbi Yochanan was the one who said, therefore they have to be Machzeh B'Yovel. And therefore it's a Kinyan Peiris. Oh, Rabbi Yochanan himself saved the day. Because Rabbi Yochanan holds that maybe the Kairei. Rabbi Yochanan says that you can say Mikra Bikurim even though you only have a Kinyan Peiris. In Ochinami, the Gemara says, if Rabbi Yochanan would have held like Reish Lakish, the Gemara uses a very, very strange phrase, a very dramatic phrase. Umole Sava Rabbi Yochanan, like Rish Lakish, lo motza yada v'ragla v'beis ha-medrash. He wouldn't have been able to find his hands and feet in the beis medrash. That's the phrase the Gemara uses. That's the phrase the Gemara uses to say that we would have thrown out of the beis medrash. That it would have been as silly. We would have laughed at Rabbi Yochanan. We would have said, Rabbi Yochanan, this is something so silly that the only parsha nikah bikurim is the one in a billion chances that it's a ben, one son, one son, one son, one son. So Rabbi Yochanan l'shitaso had to have held that maybe v'kurim. So now the Gemara Mamash just took us on a tour through Shas. We started out talking about Cheshire Mishpah, about Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf, or not. We looked at the model in the Torah of Parshas Yovel. We related this to Achad Shechalku, and now we end up with Bikur, the four different areas of Halacha. Everything merges together. So you see that, I always tell the Bracha ben Yeshiva, that Kol Tarku is a picture. It means that it's a picture in the sense of it's all interrelated. It's like a puzzle, really. All the pieces are interrelated, that if you start to yank at one side, then the whole puzzle starts to unravel. So all the areas of Halacha are interconnected. Like we saw yesterday, we spoke about the Shemitah and Shabbos. You got to look at the comparisons, the differences, because it's Kol Tarakula is one big unit. So to over here, you have Hilchos Bikur Bikurim, it's impacting on Hilchos Yoiva, which is impacting Cheshe Mishpat. A lot of things are all merging together. So that's the Gemara's phrase, Umale Matzah, Umale Savar B'Yechanan, like Rish Lakish, L'Matzah Yadav Ragla B'Beis HaMedrash. Remember, those who know the physical layout of Yeshivas Kerem Yavna, you know, people have been there recently, but there's a room like in the back, sort of in the front of it, then where you come in, but it's the front of Sadiyar and Kodesh, there's like a little closet which actually off the record with the, I think they usually store some of the ammunition for Shmirah. So it's there's like a little closet there. And usually the closet is closed, but once in a while someone used to open up the closet. So there was one boy in the yeshiva, now he happens to be a Rebbe in the yeshiva. Now, by the time he was a Bachar in the yeshiva, that he had a chavrusa, and the table was half inside the Beis Medrash, and half was inside that closet. Why? Because he chapped that the ventilation, the closet, I think, was better than in the Beis Medrash. It was more comfortable. Yeah, there was like a breeze coming out of the closet or something. So he used to have his chavrusa situated in such a way that he was sitting, mamish, like you can imagine, he's sitting over here, and his table's over, his chavrusa's on the other side. So somebody walked over to him one day and wanted to give him a real lomdish shtach, like, why is he sitting in such a foolish way? So they said to him the following. He said, aha, you must hold, he said in Hebrew, he said, you must hold that a achet shechoku lekuchasem, and you must hold that kidney peiros alaf and kidney aguf tami. So the guy looked, he was a good guy. Then he started to laugh. He said, aha, because that's what the Gemara says. If you hold those two things, lamotzi yada v'ragla v'beis ha-medrash. So you're not in the beis ha-medrash. You're sitting here, you're not with us. So he said, that was the lomdish rank out to the guy. Anyway, so he subsequently, this bach is now Rebbe in the Shiva, he became a dayan also. He's a very, very fine tamachachem. So every time I see him, I try to remind him of that that comment 30 years ago. Anyway, getting back to the story. This scenario of a kidney peiros, whether it is kidney aguf, not kidney aguf, so it was a machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. So you would think that how often does these things come up? Who makes a kidney peiros? Who's selling land that is mashuradik ways? So comes the Gemara and says, who makes a kidney peiros? Well, you all have a kidney peiros. Every person who's married has a kidney peiros. How do you have a kidney peiros? The Gemara says that the relationship between a husband and a wife in terms of property that the woman brings into the marriage is basically a relationship of a kinyan peiros. When a woman gets married, so she brings in, I mean, she could potentially bring in, or she practically brings in, a lot of nechosim into the marriage. I mean, let's say, depending on what practically happens, but in theory, she can bring in a lot of property into the marriage. So that property is divided up into two categories. There's what's called nechse malug, and there's what's called nechse tzon barzel. So nechse malug and nechse tzon barzel basically means different types of property that the husband is going to have the rights to use. So let's say nechse malug. Nechse malug means that the husband's going to have the rights to enjoy the payrus of that entity. So let's say the wife brings in land into the marriage. So the husband's going to eat the fruit. He has the dinim mominus rights to eat that fruit. Let's say she brings an animal into the marriage. So he's going to have the right to, if it's a cow, he'll get the milk. If she brings in a sheep, he's going to get the wool. So that's what's called nechse malug. Malug means to be moleg. Moleg, maliga means to, like, to pluck. Like the pluck off the feathers of a chicken is called to be moleg. So to me, he's going to pluck off the fruit. He has the right to eat the fruit. I think the official secular term for nichse meluga is usufruct, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's a German term. I think that's the term in the English Gemara is always used for nichse meluga. So nichse meluga is a type of nechosim that the husband has the right to eat the fruit, but the guf belongs to the wife, haraya. If the marriage breaks up, so then the nechosim goes back to the wife. So it's like the Achzor Sadas Biyobo. It's the same type of a model, that he gets to eat the fruit until, hopefully, the marriage will last past the Yovel. But the end of the marriage, either through death or divorce, is the halach equivalent of Yovel coming. And now it all goes back to the wife. That's Nichse Meluga. It all goes back to the wife, assuming there's something to go back. Let's say there's nothing to go back anymore. Let's say the animal died. Let's say the field is destroyed. There's nothing left anymore. So then she gets whatever's left. That's it and finished. And she walks away basically with nothing. So that's Nichse Meluga. Nichse Tzon Barzel is a little bit more in her favor. Nichse Tzon Barzel, literally iron sheep, that means that we evaluate how much the animal is worth. And yes, it's true that the husband is going to be eating the fruit, but there's a condition here. The condition is that he's going to have to reimburse her for what the value is at the time that the marriage begins. So let's say she brings in 100 sheep. So we say, okay, these are iron sheep. They're not going anywhere. I mean, we know eventually they're going to die. So maybe they'll have babies, maybe they won't have babies. But if they don't, if they all die and there's no fruit left, there's no goof left, so then, well, we still made an evaluation. At the time of the marriage, that's worth $10,000. So he's b'shabed himself. He's obligated by the halacha to pay her back that $10,000. So when the husband enters into the marriage relationship, they can decide between the two of them how they want to set up this kind of a kinyan. He doesn't own the guf, he owns the kinyan peiros, but he can either decide he's only going to take the peiros without any responsibility, he doesn't have to insure against anything, or she can get a certain kind of insurance policy called Nechse Tzon Barzel. He's going to eat the fruit, but he's going to ultimately assure her that he's going to give the value back at the end of when the marriage terminates. So these are examples that the halacha builds in, different kinds of kinyan, different types of kinyan peiros / kinyan gufs that the husband and the wife enter into. So when you can decide how much, the wife can decide to bring nothing into the marriage. The husband can say, "I want everything in Nichse Meluga. I want everything in Nichse Tzon Barzel." Whatever they can decide, whatever they want. We have a custom in Ashkenazi communities that we declare, we write within the ksuba a certain amount of Nichse Tzon Barzel. We make up a number. It doesn't correspond to anything practically. We write in Mayan Zekukim Kesef Tzarev. We write in. Besides writing the 200 zuz of the ksuba itself, so the husband obligates himself to two other things at the time of the marriage. He adds on 100 zuz, 100 zakukin. 100 zakukin are a German coin from the Middle Ages. So he says, "I'm going to give the value of 100 zakukin just to show my a tremendous love that I want to add on to the 200 zuz. 200 zuz is the bare minimum of the ksuba that the halacha dictates, either deraisa or derabanan. But then the Mishnah says in Ksubis, in the fifth break, you can add on whatever you want. So the husband says, "I want to add on a Tesefis Ksubis. I can add on another 100 Zekukin." And then we say that we make him believe that the woman brings into the marriage 100 Zekukin worth of property, and we evaluate it. That's worth 100 Zekukin. We don't do anything like that. She doesn't bring it. She doesn't. We don't do anything. But we write a make-believe number that it's as if she's bringing 100 Zekukin of animals and property and land or whatever it is. And the husband says, "Okay, yeah, it's worth 100 zakukin. I'm a shabbat myself to pay that 100 zakukin." So he's bekabel upon himself as nechse tzon barzel. That's what we call the nedunya. That's what we call the dowry. That's why we have three parts in our ksuba. So we have the ikar ksuba, that's the halacha requires. And then the two parts that are voluntary are the tosefes ksuba and the nedunya. So we write into the nedunya, v'dan nedunya, den asla mibavua, bein bekesa, bein bezoa, bein tachshitim, one of the zdirim, all these mumble-jumble Aramaic phrases, all the things that you brought into the marriage. Maybe yeah, maybe no. Why we write such exorbitant numbers if it's not true? He can accept whatever he wants. He can make believe whatever he wants. It doesn't bother us. So why do we have such a custom? In Europe, nobody had any money. Nobody brought in no kesef, no zav, no money. If they were lucky, they brought in a couple of old sheets and towels. So they wanted everyone felt in the chassid. They wanted to make believe that they're rich. So they wrote these exorbitant numbers. No one's going to pay the numbers anyway. No one ever had any kesef and zav. No one had zakukin. No one had anything. So they could barely pay for the chicken for the wedding. So they used to write in these numbers. So we have a minigata yemus that we write in these numbers. They're not going anywhere. No one's actually evaluating this. In the Sephardi communities, they actually write in real numbers. They write more authentic numbers that corresponding to maybe a little closer to what's actually being brought in. Remember, I was once asked in Masada Kedushin at one of my Tamizim, a Sephardi boy, And I said to him, the only thing is, I have no problem with Sar Kedushin. Two things. I said, number one, I can't sing the songs. I said, I don't know. So I got to get the Chazan to sing the songs. And I said, number two, I said, I need help with filling out the Ksuba because it's not a standard. It's not you can't just go to Eifel's and buy Ksuba. They have different nuances and different numbers in there. So he said to me, no problem. The song someone else will sing. And he said, there's someone else there who will help you out with the Ksuba. Of course, I come to the wedding. The person who was supposed to help me, I had no idea how to fill out the Sadik Suba either. So I'm standing there, I remember I was stuck in traffic because I came a little bit late, standing there with this document. I couldn't figure out the first line because it has already in the first blank line, it has something that's not on the standard Ashkenazi Suba. It said, there was a bays with a line, not Bi'ech B'Shabbos, but it was by the place. I couldn't figure out what they wanted me to write in there. So I'm standing there. So I remember I called one of Sfati Rav I knew. My luck, it was Mincha Ma'ariv time, so he was davening. He couldn't talk to me. So I called 2-3 Rabbanim. No one could talk. Everyone was davening Mincha. I couldn't find him. I had no idea what to do. So I'm draying around. I'm just sitting there. People are, my hands were tied. So finally I tracked down Sfati Rav, who told me that on that line, so they write on the Har Ploni. In a get, so the Gemara says you have to identify the place and also identify it by the rivers. In a ksuba and other stars, we don't do that. We only do that by a get. But the Sfar apparently do that by a ksuba also. They identify it was Brooklyn. It said like Brooklyn. That said a long blank. It was supposed to be Al Kef Yama on the seashore, Al Nahar East River, whatever. Like you would identify Brooklyn in a get. So they identify it in a ksuba as well. So then I needed somebody to help me with all the numbers. And back and forth, it was a 20-hour procedure to try to get this ksuba written. So again, but the basic theme is the same. We accept the ksuba and we accept the same ksuba in the dunya. So the bottom line is, the reason why I spoke about ksubas is that within our regular weddings, you got to have a chasana today, you got a regular weddings. That's what's going on. There's a relationship that's being created of a kinyan peiros and a kinyan guf. You have to know who owns what. So the Gemara says that kinyan peiros, the sugya of Rabbi Yechon Rish Lokish, is a sugya not just in terms of buying and selling karak. It's enough to mean in terms of Baal B'nichse Ishtai also. The Gemara says that, let's say, a husband brings Bikur and B'nichse Ishtai. Let's say he got a field, B'nichse Malog, and now he's bringing the fruit. So does he read the parasha or not? So according to Rish Lokish, he can't read the parasha. According to Rabbi Yechon, he can't read the parasha. So the issue of Kinyan Peiros and Kinyan Aguf affects us. I mean, bring Bikurim, it affects us. The whole parasha of Yovel, it's all one big sukkah that permeates many, many different areas of halacha. So this is at least one example, the first example of where you have a situation where it's not crystal clear who the owner of the object is. I have payers, you have goof, you have goof, I have payers, who owns what for where. So that's chaps nafkaminas. And the basic nafkamina that Gemara presents as the prototype of nafkamina is the issue in terms of Bikur Bikurim. Hopefully, with the Shem and future Shurim, so we'll discuss other kinds of strange scenarios of Dini Mominus of who owns what and where, which is going to impact in terms of Eshmeris and Mitzvahs.